say Tehillim, we have to a new sefer la natzich maskil of Mekarach. Okay, page 380, the new sefer, and the first couple of mizmarim are mizmarim from the children of Korach. Now we'll see the Radak in a few moments exactly how could it possibly be preserved for so many years what the Bnei Korach said. David lived long after Bnei Korach. Let's just read it for a few words. A guest composer? Yes, I don't remember if this is the first time we are in the Sefer. I don't remember. But in any event, let's read a few psukim. And the basic theme of this mizmar is golos. It is about really predicting what's going to be. David is writing this, like in Ruach HaKodesh, and he's describing the difficulties of living in exile. In fact, the Siporno, he goes through the entire Mizmar as a historical record of Jewish history of the Dalet Malchias. There's a lot of good source material in these Mizmarim and Mechol for the Dalet Malchias. I'm sure Mechol, you're familiar with this. And a lot of different things come up here. Now let's see over here, let's just read a few pesukim. We'll look at the Mitzudos and Rashi, Lametzech, Maskil, Levnei Korach. For the conductor, maskil, this is an unusual word over here to use as a hakdama, maskil, discernment, enlightenment for the Bnei Korach. The Bnei Korach at the beginning were loyal to their father. Their father obviously went up against Moshe Rabbeinu, and then they came to enlightenment. They came to realize that their father was wrong and Moshe was correct. And they abandoned their own father in support of Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is what they said. Now what they said, interesting, doesn't really have anything to do at face value with their rebellion against leadership, Moshe Rabbeinu. They just discuss general ideas, general expressions of suffering that the Jewish people experience in the years of Golos. So it has to be addressed, what is the connection between the Bnei Korach in their rebellion against Moshe and then their realization that Moshe Rabbeinu was correct and their father Korach was wrong? What does that have to do with Golos? So let's keep that thought and question in mind, and maybe we'll see some ideas as we go through. They begin, Ke'ayol tarog alafi ke'moyim kein nafshit sarog elecha elokim. There are many issues with this pasuk. One thing at a time, an ayol is a wild animal. Let's not confuse the ayol with the ayil.
He calls it
the heart. The heart. Katzvi v'cha ayol. It is a wild animal. It is not a domesticated animal. In the Beis HaMikdash, we bring an ayolim, elim, which are rams, which are mature goats. A goat in its second, I think, third year, when a goat matures, it's called an ayil. And before that, it's called a seira, a soir or a seira. Am I making a mistake? Is it the other way around? I'm already getting confused. But that's part of the same family. The soir is the male, the seira is the female. And when they become, maybe the other way around, the ayil is when it's young. An ayil and ayolah are when they are babies, when they are very, very young. Moshe, I'm the Akedah, this week's parasha. Ayil, achar nechas basvach bekarnav. Ayil means a domesticated animal. Not a hart, not an animal that is similar to a deer. The Torah talks about eating besar taiva. Torah says you can eat besar taiva all you want, just don't drink its blood. You will eat it kitavas, like the desire of your heart. Katzvi v'che ayol. A tzvi and ayol are animals that are never ever offered in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach. Because you only bring in the Beis HaMikdash and Mizbeach domesticated animals, behemoths. Only three categories. You have the category of the sheep, of the kvasim, and then you have the category of the parim, and then you have the category of the seirim. There are three different categories of animals that are offered on the Mizbeach. The egel, which turns into a par, a keves, which turns into the sheep. The keves is just the same thing. There's the keves, this can be 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old. There's no different name for an adult sheep. And the ayil turns into the soyer. The soyer is the adult. So we have of your three, you only bring in the Mizbech, three domesticated, you don't domesticate animals, you never bring in the Beis HaMidosh, but there's a carbon, a wild animal. Avram Avinu at the Akedah, he saw after he was going to bring Yitzchak, the sixth parasha, Vayisna Vayar Vihine Ayil. Ayil is a domesticated animal, and it's very interesting because, you know, we know that the spent time on the Aleph Beis, the language of the Aleph Beis is divine, and it's not a coincidence that the word Ayil and the word ayol have exactly the same letters. Exactly the same letters. And that's a pella, that's a shocking thing. Because everything, the Torah is not just, nothing's a coincidence, the letters of the Aleph Beis are divine, and we would never expect, if you did not know this, you would never ever expect that there can be two completely different species of animals that share exactly the same letters, and the only difference is the pronunciation. Is it an ayil or an ayol? An ayil is a behema, and an ayol is a chaya, a wild animal. The chelev, the fats of a chaya are permitted, whereas the chelev of a behema, when it's offered, is categorically forbidden. There's a major fundamental differences between these two animals, that they're completely different species, yet they share exactly the same letters. The first opening word, the opening word of the Bnei Karach is to describe an ayol, a wild animal that is similar to a deer. It's some type of animal which has a very strong resemblance to a deer, and Ta'aroig, the word ta'aroig is a difficult word, the different perushim will see, but it's, for our purpose right now, it means it cries. Every animal has a unique sound. Every animal, and not only does it have a unique sound, there is a unique word that the Torah uses to describe that sound. A dog barks, a horse neighs, okay, an owl oops, okay, you know this better than me, every animal has a unique sound. The word tarog is the description.
And across cultures,
yeah.
Dogs are attributed with different sounds, with different languages.
What do you mean
by that? Maybe the language. A dog in Sweden doesn't sound the same.
Right.
Every...
They mimic
people.
Pitch.
Really?
Yeah.
Than in America. Very interesting. Yeah. Every animal has a unique sound, and it's described with a different term. The word taroig, saroig, at least according to the interpretation of most of the Farshim we'll see inside, is a description of the sound of an ayol. It is a unique word describing their cry. They cry, Elecha.
Because it cries longingly.
It's a unique type of cry, Alafike Mayim, on streams of water. The ayol has a desperate need to quench its thirst. In the Farshim extent, because an ayol is a very hungry creature, and it ends up eating poison by mistake. It ends up eating nechashim because it's so hungry. It eats snakes, it eats different rodents, and these things are poisonous, and it causes the ayol, it causes it to get hot, to get a fever. And in order to diminish the fever, to take down its fever, it desperately needs water. So the ayol, it's interesting, the ayol, from the first, the way they learn is the ayol really would not need water. Like any other creature, it needs to be hydrated, but it does need to have an extra dosage. It's only because the ayol puts itself in a difficult situation, it poisons itself, and then it causes its body temperature to rise, and now it has a desperate need to lower its body temperature by drinking water. This is a muscle for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, in Galus, has a tendency to do averus. When you live amongst goyim, and the goyim have a very powerful influence over you, the seviva, and the goyim do terrible averus, so it affects Klal Yisrael. So what do we end up doing? We end up partaking of the poison of the averus of society. And then, because we are not accustomed to this type of behavior, we get sick, and we get a fever, and our body temperature, the Klal Yisrael, becomes very, very hot, because we're not, the nechoshim and the akrovim that the goyim eat, and for them it's no big deal, for us is the big deal. It's for us, it's poisonous. And when we consume this poison, our body temperature goes up, we get very sick, and we have a desperate need to quench our thirst with water. And what is water? Mayim is always a metaphor for Torah. Hoy kol tzame l'chulvayim. Before I forget, I apologize, but we're learning to Elizechu, Lishmas, Ramayevsky, your grandmother, Yehudis. May her neshama have an aliyah. Okay, so Ka'ayel Tarek Alafik Emang, this over here is a metaphor for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, they're like the ayol. Why? It's specifically when we are in Golus, because the ayol doesn't need water. The ayol can do very well like any other creature, but the ayol ends up eating poison. And when it eats the poison, especially the nachashim, the nachash hakadmoini, the nachash is always a symbol for chait, and that causes us to become sick. And then when we're sick, we have to immediately heal ourselves. How do we heal ourselves? By drinking water. What kind of water? The water of Torah. So in Golus, Klal Yisrael finds itself in desperation to satisfy itself spiritually, because we're in a dangerous environment, and that dangerous environment threatens us, an existential threat. When you're living in the matzah of having an existential threat, you need to fortify yourself with spirituality more so had you just been living in a safe environment. And that's what it says, of there's a yearning, there's a longing cry to find to satisfy itself al afike mayim, on streams of water. Just like this ayol tarek al afike mayim came, likewise nafshi sadoig elecha elokim, so does my neshama cry out to you, Hashem. Does my neshama cry again? This is the perfect metaphor for also like for Bnei Korach, because the Bnei Korach, what did they do? They drank, they ate poison. They were influenced by Korach. Korach, Dasan, Va'aviram, and the 250 men. They were poisonous people, toxic people. And they went and they rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Bnei Korach, you know, they were part of the team. And then what happened? When they consumed that poison of rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu, they got very sick. And in fact, they were sitting on the Pesach Shel Gehenim. And now they, more than anyone else, needed to heal themselves, to take down their temperature by drinking some cold water, take a cold shower. And that way they would be able to come to their senses and realize that this poison is not good for us to follow in the ways of Korach. So this is mamash that comes right out of their mouth, this from the Bnei Korach. And the truth is, this really is a mashal. They are a mashal for Klal Yisrael in Golus. Because how did Klal Yisrael come to Golus? How did they come to Golus? Because they, Klal Yisrael, us, we tasted from the nachash. And the nachash, just like the ayil eats nachashim, and that which is poisonous, so too we have tasted from the nachash hakadmoini, the chait of the nachash, which always represents sin, and that we find ourselves now in a very difficult matzav, and we need to do teshuva and refresh ourselves with the mayim of Torah. And we yearn, we cry out to Hashem, so too, kei navshi tarag elech elokim. This is why the ayol is the perfect mashal for the Bnei Korach, and the perfect mashal for Klal Yisrael in Golos. The next part, soma navshi, my neshama. Okay, this is the Siddhavati plagiarized from the songs. The people, he must have gone into Eichler's and saw what they play, and he took it and he plagiarized
it.
He took his name. It's unbelievable, the plagiarism. Unbelievable of David HaMelech. Unbelievable. Sama nafshi le'elokim. My neshama has a thirst for Hashem, le'kel choy, for the living God. Mosai avoy, when will I come? Ve'ei ro'eh p'nei elokim. When will I come? When will I see the p'nei elokim? Pasuk dalet. Hoisli demasi lechem.
The
Pasuk dalet? Okay. Hoisli demasi lechem. My tears served in place of bread. Yom v'layla, day and night. The emor elai kol hayom ayei elokecha. When the goyim said to me, every single day, taunted me. The goyim throughout Golus have always taunted the Jewish people and said, where's your God? This was something in the concentration camps where the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, they would continuously say to the Jewish people, no, where's your God? They would taunt the Jewish people. This is mamash a prophecy of what took place like none other time in times of the Holocaust. They said, Be'mor Eli, kol hayoim ayei elokecha, where is your God? And during that time, we cried, and our tears served in the place of bread, day and night. Pasuk Hey, Eila Eskira. Now this very famous, this expression is here, is where it comes from. Eila Eskira, there have been numerous memoirs, numerous svarim that dwell upon Eila Eskira, on the tragedy. There are also the opening words of Eila Eskira, on the Asarug Malchus, and subsequently there have been many svarim describing the horrors of the Holocaust and all Jewish tragedies, and here it's taken from this pasuk, and especially from the background of this mizmor that deals with goyim, with a golus, and with the goyim taunting the Jewish people, saying to us, "Kol ayoyim ayelokecha el eskra, the eshbicha olai nafshi, my nesham pours itself out." Ki evor bas ki, you know, what is it referring to? So over here it's a zecher. We contrast the good old days with the horrors of the present. And this is a very difficult expression. There are many translations for the word basoch. Basoch is a very difficult word in this pasuk, and we're going to see all the different perushim. But right now we'll translate it. These I recall. And when I recall that I have memories of the good old days, my neshama pours out. What do I recall? When it says, in other words, ki is going back on Eila Eskira. This is what I remember. Ki evar basoch. When I passed, I'll learn now, in covered wagons. Okay, the eglas tzav. In the Torah, we learned that the Nesiim, when they made a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, they donated eglas tzav. So that's like, you know, you want to have a car, you can get a Chevy, or you can get a Tesla today. Today is the fancy car, a Lamborghini. When we used to travel to Eretz Yisrael in style, in class, we traveled to Eretz Yisrael basoch, in covered wagons. The word soch means a shelter. And in this context, according to one of the many interpretations, we are describing the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, when we would come to the Beis HaMikdash to rejoice in the Divine Presence. This is Shalosh Pam Bashana, Yeru called Zechur Chasnei Hashem Lokecha, Bamokoy Masha Yifchar. This was the happiest moment of the Jewish people, when they would merit to be in the presence of Hashem three times a year. They would make their pilgrimage, and they would travel in style. Basoch means in covered wagons. Soch is like a shelter, and our journey was sheltered. Edadein.
Like a
schach. Schach, correct. Schach, excellent, right? Schach. Edadein, which means I would totter. After you got out of the airport, then you would go get onto the light rail, and you would go and you would huddle together and walk together, travel together as groups. A-e-da-de means to totter, to move as a group. Ad, until base Elohim, until the base Elohim. Okay, the next page. The Kol Rina, with a voice of joy, Visoida, thanksgiving. Homoin Choygeik, the multitudes of the Jewish people would celebrate. And now, okay, we'll stop over here. Now, what do I have now? And now I just mourn. Now I have nothing. Now we're in Golos, and we're in a very desperate situation. And we're at the extreme opposite of what it was like to have a Beis HaMikdash and be able to merit the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Okay, so this is just a basic hakdama to this mizmar. Let's start right away with the mitzvah of David very quickly, and then we'll go into the Rashi. Rashi says quite a bit. There's an enormous amount of information in the Rashi. With verse the mitzvah of David, Pasuk Aleph, on page 380, Maskil, Bezeh Yilmedu Das V'Haskel L'Spalel Al HaGeula. The mitzvah of David says something very, very deep. And he says, the B'nai Karach are telling, the way he learns Maskil, a very unique translation, they're telling Klal Yisrael, learn from what we're going to tell you what to do in the future when you find yourself in Golus, how to pray. Use this Mizmar as a tool to reflect a proper approach to being Mispalel, to leave Golos. This is, maskil means to be wise. What does it mean being wise? Zer chocham, horoye es hanoilad. A major chunk of wisdom is not just to go look back at history. Oh, very nice, you get a PhD. You'll tell me about what life was like 500 years ago in a certain remote part of the world, an ancient civilization that doesn't exist anymore. Very nice, you have a PhD, you understand, what does it do for you? What's the practical lesson? There's a very great benefit in Chochmah, in knowing how to move forward. Not just to study something for the sake of intellectual entertainment. To understand the lessons. What is the takeaway? What is the Musar Haskel of what we can take from this and apply it to our daily lives going forward? The B'nai Korach are describing, they obviously lived through a traumatic experience where their father went and rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu like none other. He brought with him a whole movement, and they were all caught up in it, and they saw at the very end the MS, and they did Teshuvah, and they're reflecting, and they're telling Klal Yisrael, let what happened to us be a lesson for you in your existence, how to go forward and move ahead in your existence.
Another angle that I was thinking of is that Korach, you were involved in a schism in Klal Yisrael, and what led to Golus also.
Machloikis. The Machloikis between Yeravam and Rechavam.
And all over the place.
And at the very end, the Biryoinim, the Prushim.
Right up through Sinaskina.
Sinas Chinam, even time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, the Klal Yisrael was split into three groups. Had they unified into one group, there never would have been a Churban. It's always been like that. The problem is, and even at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, Tzidkiyahu, there were different groups. What should we do? Should we surrender? Should we fight? Machlekes is always what does us in. It's always the cause of all evil. And here, he's telling them, maskil, the mitzvah stuff is saying quite a mouthful. Maskil here means, use this, bezeh, yilmedu das, v'haskil, use this as a tool to understand what to do in the future, l'hispalel al hagula. Okay, ke'ayol, k'mo ayol. B'nei Korach.
No matter what.
To their father, Korach.
Yeah.
We don't even say their names. We don't even mention the name. Rashi is going to discuss this. Very good. How come they, Korach was a very evil person. I think you have to step back. You know, Korach, if you want to know a chilik between the litvak and the chosid, in the Hasidic world, there's this, I don't want to say not nice things here, but I'm not such a nice guy, so it's not a kasha. There's a sickness, and they really, I shouldn't say, it's not nice to say that, but in the Torah of Hasidic Torah, they're always coming to be miyashiv Korach. Korach wasn't so bad. Korach was a sheni yid. No, he made a mistake. No, so he went and rebelled against Moshe. By the litvax, Korach is a rosha merusha yimach shemar v'zecha. He's chutz l'machne. He's poison. He's worse than the satan. In the Hasidic world, he's not so bad. He's not so bad. And they're always coming to the Miyashiv, Korach, you know, his mistake was daka shebedaka, and l'asid lovoi, Korach is going to be restored.
Where do you get this?
In the Chassidus Svar. When you play around with the Chassidus from, you will see like the Korach, they're really obsessed with Korach, trying to be miyashif. And you know, it says a lot about, you know, you always try to superimpose upon other people your own beliefs. It's a certain hashkafa. I know it does definitely touch upon a hashkafa, the Bar Ditshuva. The Bar Ditshuva, in the very holy way, is always coming to be melamed zuchus and klal Yisrael. When you live a life of being melamed zuchus and klal Yisrael, korach, you're going to be melamed zuchus. If you're a Baal Mus, the Litvish world originally was a movement that was heavily influenced by Rabbi Shol Salanter. Heavily. Rabbi Shol Salanter really is the Musa movement. And originally used to be that those that were opponents, misnagdim, to Hasidus, were very strong believers of Rabbi Shol Salanter, Musar. And in Musar, there's no nonsense. A person is a Rasha, he's out. He's Michutz Lamachaneh. He is evil. Evil, evil, evil. Stay far, far away. And today we live in a world today where it's a big mix. Today every chassid is a litvak, and every litvak, every misnaged is a chassid. Today we live in a world today where everything is all mixed up. You walk into a shul, half the people are wearing garitals, and they're wearing strimals, and they're wearing bech, and all the big bali musar, they're heavily influenced by the thinking of the chassidus shul, which is fine. That's perfectly fine. Everyone has what to offer, but in its purest sense, there's a very big difference in how you look at korach. If And Hasidim, it was a movement very much for the masses. And the masses are not Bali Musar. And you have to be Miyashiv, you have to be Mechazek, people that are Choytim. And that is why it comes out in their Torah that they very much try to find some Zuchus for Korach. And in the fact that you've Kalman made a very good point, Maskil Livnei Korach, we're mentioning Korach, and we're mentioning Korach over here in a very positive sense, over here in the most beautiful, beautiful expressions of Ka'ayot, Harag, Alefike, Moim. This is mamish romanticizing Klal Yisrael in their striving to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and whose name is on it? Korach! Livnei Korach! Rav Kalman Zachosit!
So anybody can become Korach.
But it's a very dangerous game. When you see evil, okay, it's true, but you know, evil is evil. When you see evil, evil is really like it's when you experience evil, when you're a victim of evil, wow, evil is something that you have to eradicate. I have nothing.
But the point is that the neighbor, you don't have to introduce the children, the father.
Yaakov Avinu, when he gave the brachas to his children, he didn't want to mention. There are many examples. He did not want to mention Shimon and Levi.
No, Moshe does.
They don't want to mention them because he did not want to be associated with with evil. They went. They did something that was.
They were the ones who did wrong. Here, the one who did wrong is not the B'nai Korach.
It was
still.
Okay, but
well, that's why you say it on Rosh Hashanah before shofar blowing. What's the purpose of saying? Of course, it says for you, Tiku. I mean, you talk about shofar, but I want the thought process is that on the aval to do tshuva properly, you have to realize aval and achim kavosein and fatanu. Therefore, we hold up, you know, Bnei Korach, or it's very difficult to say, my father wasn't perfect. And a lot of people, you hear them saying, "There's such a my father was such a tzaddik."
Right before you blow shofar, la'nitzach livnei Korach mizmar. Like Korach, just the name of Korach should make you shake. So, would someone say the word, say Hitler? Just in a holy moment, he is.
But the inspiration is to be named Korach.
I know, but so say their names. Their names are Asir, Elkanah, va'Aviyosaf.
When they maybe it's to teach you that even if you had a Karev and a father, you could be a B'nai Karev.
I'll tell you, you know, Mayor here told me an incredible observation. Mayor Appeldorf, an incredible observation. It really blew my mind what he said. Think about this. Adam and Chava had three children. The first two children was Cain and Hevel. Rashi makes it very clear that Cain was born before the Chet Eitz Hadas. Hevel was born after the Chet Eitz Hadas. Rashi says, Mamish, V'gam Konisius Elokim, and Rashi in the beginning of Bereishis, he makes it very, very clear. Cain, so it is amazing, Cain, Adam and Chava were created. And then they had Cain. And then the Nochash comes and makes trouble. And before you turn around, the eighth and the eighth Sadas, there's a curse in this world. And after that, then Hevel is born.
Isn't that whole time period a very short time?
Very short. The whole thing is not as hard to understand. But that's what Rashi says. Rashi is very clear. Cain was before the Chet Eitz Hadas, and Hevel was after the Eitz Hadas. Now, between Cain and Hevel, then we have the story of Cain and Hevel. Cain kills Hevel. So who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? Hevel was a very good person. Because Hevel, Hashem accepted his carbon. Hashem loved Hevel. Cain was a murderer. He was a Ratzeach. He was a jealous. He has all the bad midos. Cain has all the bad midos. You could imagine that was Cain. He was jealous. He was cheap. And he killed. He's a murderer. Mamish a murderer. So wait a minute. When was Cain was born to Adam and Chava? When? When they were tzaddikim, before they sinned. They were a tzaddik meikarai. Adam and Chava, pure people, the Yitzir Kap of Shul HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they didn't do an Avera, and they had a child who's a murderer. Adam and Chava sin. They do the worst thing possible. They disobey Hashem, they eat from the Eitz Hadas, they're cursed. The whole world is cursed. And now they decide to have a child. Hevel. So when Adam and Chava had Hevel, Adam and Chava were balei teshuvah. They went to Esh HaTorah. Chabad got hold of them. They're balei teshuvah. Adam and Chava were balei teshuvah. They became balei teshuvah. And they had a child, Hevel. Hevel was a tzaddik. Hevel was a tzaddik. Hevel was a big tzaddik. Okay? Not Noach. Hevel was a big tzaddik. So how you talking? Look what's going on. Adam and Chava, before the Eitz Hadas, were tzaddikim meikara. And they had a child that was a Rasha. Adam and Chava, version number two, after the Chet Eitz Hadas, were balei teshuvah. They were sitting in Eshtar and whatever, they were sitting in the balei teshuvah yeshivas. And they had a child that was a tzaddik. So isn't that interesting? Is that you would think, as Rashi says by Yitzchak, in Parashas told us, exactly. You would think, listen, that's by in our generation, it's all a bit, you know, our generation, you know, everything is upside down. In our world, everything is upside down. You know, look, Rashi says, Ein edoy metfilas tzadik ben tzadik letfilas Rasha ben Tzadik, by Yitzchak and Rivka, when they were mispadlo for children. They were mispadlo. So you get the impression that ordinarily, a tzaddik, the default is that the tzaddik has a child, that's a tzaddik. And the Rasha and the Baal Tshuva, you know, for them it's much harder. You see from the very beginning of creation, Adam and Chava, when they were tzaddikim gemurim, koidim achet, had a child, Rashi says, Cain, who turned out to be a jealous chaleria and was a Rasha. And after Adam and Chava sinned and were humbled by Hashem and were driven out of Gan Eden, they had another child, Hevel, before, and he was a tzaddik. Hashem accepted his carbon. Hashem, he was pleasant in the eyes of Hashem. Haloi Dovar, don't ever judge a person. Go back to the very beginning. Okay, so you're talking about B'nai Korach. B'nai Korach, these were tzaddikim. They were such tzaddikim. Look, we're learning the lessons, the expressions of Ka'ayil Ta'aroik, Alafike Moyim. These expressions are just off the charts in their beauty, in their in defining the relationship of Klal Yisrael, and yet their father was from the most evil people in the history of Klal Yisrael, who literally came that close to destroying the entire Klal Yisrael. Okay, he represents the rebellion against authority. According to the Medrash, he held that Torah is lav min hashamayim. That's what it says. Torah is not min hashamayim. He's the root of everything evil that you could imagine. And yet, we glorify his children. We literally glorify his children. The moment of Yom HaDin, the moment before you blow shofar, where your life is hanging on the line, seven times, lam natzeach livnei koirach mizmon. And here, okay, so there's something to be said of not judging, you know, of a person. You look at a person's children, don't look at a person's children. They come from something that's not exactly pleasant. You have to be very, very careful.
Don't look at Jesus.
How do you reconcile that with Ein Adam Mitzvah, Tzadik Ben Tzadik, and Tzadik Ben Rasha? These are all very difficult questions. Okay, let's go further. Over here, the Mitzvah of David says, "Ayol kamoha ayol ha'atzoekes." We started with this today. Ha'atzoekes al chesher namayim kishein lo liravois hatzimoin. When the ayol who eats from the poison of the nochash, when its body is hot and it attempts to find water to cool itself off, it cries to Hashem like no other creature. Turn the page. The Mitzvah is on page 383. I yearn to enter into the home of Hashem like a person who is thirsty for water. The Eshal, and I ask, when will I see Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash? Hoysali dimois bichyoisai hemolid, my tears are to me bimakam alechem, return to Lemar, yasbiu oisiki luchalti lechem. My tears serve for me as bread. He says here that there's a diet, okay? A person who cries and his tears flow, it takes away his appetite. Everyone quotes this pasuk, Vatifke Viloy Soichal. So they explain it's a cause and effect. If you just read this pasuk at face value, you say, oh, she cried and she didn't eat. Ha'ilchud v'ha'ilchud. Chan was very upset. She wanted a child, so she cried. So Elkanah said, you know, we have reservations in the Waldorf for dinner. Don't you want to come for dinner in the Waldorf? You have some delicious food? No, I'd rather go to the Beis HaMikdash and cry to Hashem. V'efkeh v'loy soichal. He's saying that's not the pshat in the pasuk. He's saying is the crying. She had plenty of time. The crying session was 9 in the morning. Dinner is 6 o'clock in the afternoon. She wasn't doing anything else during that time. She wasn't crying. It's not because she was busy crying and she didn't eat. It's because she cried so bitterly at 9 o'clock in the morning that took away her appetite. The litmus test, if a person's tears are for real or they're crocodile tears, is if you have an appetite to eat. On Yom Kippur, think about Yom Kippur, people cry the whole Yom Kippur. And when Yom Kippur is over, now it's time to eat. When Yom Kippur is over, you have a very hearty appetite to eat a lot of food. It goes to show that the tears were crocodile tears. It's a mitzias. Real tears that come from the neshama take away your appetite. There's no need to eat. You don't have an appetite. And a person cries, and then he's very hungry, and has a delicious meal, and he wants to eat more and more and more, there are different types of tears. Chana's, this was a proof, a litmus test, that when Chana cried for a child, she wasn't just crying because, I want to have a child, so I shouldn't be embarrassed for my neighbors and this and that. She really wanted a child for the right reason. And her tears were sincere as they get, and the proof, it's a proof. This is a proof. That's what all the Farshim say, the same idea. This pasuk, my tears were bread. Real tears are satisfying You don't need to eat anymore. You don't need to eat. And the proof is Chan Vatifke. They were real tears. They weren't. They weren't just oh, how beautiful it is. You hear a nice song and you cry. People cry for many different reasons. There are tears of joy. There are all different types of tears. Vatifke v'loy soichal. That is a tear that comes out of the neshama and that is satisfying, equal to bread. Once you eat, you don't need it anymore. How much can you eat already? You're full. Your stomach is full. It becomes a nachila gasa. Okay. Our enemy. Now, by the way, I'll just tell you a sidebar. I was listening to Chaim Kanievsky. I was looking at Chaim Kanievsky. They have some nice little stories there on Tehillim, on each mizmah. They have a little story, and he says this. Someone came to Chaim Kanievsky and he asked him. I think it was Chaim Kanievsky. He asked him for a bracha that his child should be a big Talmud Chacham and a Yarei Shemayim. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, there's a story from the Brisker Rav. I think that's how it says over there. They went to the Brisker Rav and they asked him for the same bracha. Give me a bracha that my child should be a big Talmud Chacham and a big Yarei Shemayim. And the Brisker Rav says, for this, you don't need a bracha. You have to. Bracha is not going to help you. What you need is action. The degree that the child will be a Talmud Chacham will depend on how much effort his father invests in him to learn with him and to make sure that he learns. And the degree to which the child will be a Yorei Shemayim depends on how many tears his mother will cry for him when she lights candles Friday night. Don't come ask me for brachas, magic, hocus pocus, schoolus, and brachas. Automatically, it's so easy that your child will be a Talmud Chacham and a Yorei Shemayim. If you want your child to be a Talmud Chacham, learn with him. Learn with him. Go to Ovos, Subanim. I was so impressed. I know some people they had Friday night. They started where I davened, Rabbi Schmidman. They started Ovos, Subanim this week. They make a very big deal about it. So then at night, late at night, they sent out, someone took some pictures on WhatsApp. They sent out pictures. Mitzvah Shabbos. So they said Baruch Hashem, opening night. Major success. The place was packed. And I looked at the pictures, and I saw people that I know, Chaverim that I know, and these people I know are extremely busy. They're very, very busy. And I saw them there in these pictures, sitting there with their children, really learning. I was very moved. Like these people, they take it very seriously. They take out of their time. They come there, they sat there. They settled in with their children to go and invest the time to learn with them. And the pictures were very impressive. Sitting and learning with the children, one after another. If you don't go to Avos Labanim, you can be arrested for child abuse. Child neglect. If you don't, two things you have to do today that if you don't do, you get arrested for child neglect. You have to avos labanim, and if you don't throw them up in the air for Moshe MS, Viseras MS, you go to jail for child neglect. Even though it's mamish bikoach nefesh. Even though, I told you this year, I saw at Simchas Torah, the mechitza was wide open, there was no mechitza, and I saw the difference between the men and the women. The men were throwing up their children, and the women were looking like, oh my gosh, don't drop him. Like, their hearts were going out. Are you crazy? What are you doing? You're letting go of him in the air like he could fall on the floor.
What did Mike forget?
Forget in the middle to pick him, right? So you want a bracha for Torah and Yerushalayim. The more you invest in learning, the more he will be a Talmud Chacham. The more you will cry for him, the more he'll be Yerushalayim. And the author of this book tied that story into this pasuk. It says over here the two things. It says, "I cry." David says, "At Soma Navshi Lukim Lekelchem Mosai Avoy VeEre Pnei Elukim." Base Medrash. When will I come to the base Medrash to learn? And the next pasuk is Hoisli Dimasi Lechem Yom Avalayla. And the tears were my bread day and night. That he learns the tears of Yira Shemayim. The more you take your kid to the Beis Medrash to learn, to make learning enjoyable, the more he'll develop into a Talmud Chacham. The more you'll cry before is Yireh Shemayim, the more he'll be Yireh Shemayim. Okay, further in the Mitzvah Stavid, Hoisli Lechem, next Mitzvah Stavid, Be'emar, Ba'avur Shoivai Armuli Ayei Elokecha, Im Elokim Hu, V'yakum V'yazurecha, if he is your God, why doesn't he get up and save you? This has been the taunt of our enemies for the last 2,000 years, continuously, nonstop. Where's your God? What are you doing over here? Now, this will, you know, this is a very interesting thing. This question bothered me last week. I don't have an answer. I mean, it's not really a question. It says the last six parsha that Avraham, there was a famine. He went down to Egypt, and what happened? He says to Sarah. Sarah, you know, he no yadad ki isha yifas mara'at. Imri no achoisiyad, l'man yitav liv avarech v'chois navshi biglalech. He puts her in a box. Doesn't help. They find out. They take her. They see her. She's beautiful. They take her to Paro. Okay, she's held hostage. And then Rashi says, so what happened the whole that night? Paro was smitten with this disease called Rosson. If you don't know what that disease is, just listen to the radio. I don't even get. You have to know, learn the Rashi in Ian. You'll understand. You'll understand the joke. And what does it say? What does it say at the end? It says that the Rashi says that Esther, she said to the Malach, smite, hit him, frask, whack, Malach, give him a zetz, give him a zetz. It says in Rashi that every 5 minutes, every time Paro misbehaved, Sarah said to the Malach, beat him up. Beat him up. So my question to you is, if Sarah has such magical powers, she can say, they should make a movie, right? No. She can say to the Malach, Malach, give him a zetz, give him a frask, beat him up, take out your taser and electrocute him. Why couldn't she escape entirely? Why did she have to be there altogether? If the Malach, she has such supernatural powers, such a close relationship with the divine order, she can pull off all these miracles. So what is she capturing? What is she doing there to begin with? She says, Shei the Malach, Malach, open the door and let's get out of here. We should never be there to begin with. When Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim, wow, what a miracle. Instead of them transporting Tzoya, instead of them transporting nefet, things that are toxic and have an odor that is disgusting, oh, a miracle happened. What were they transporting to Egypt? Perfume. What are the chances that the cargo that they would put Yosef in a transport of cargo? The chances are 0%. It was Hashkocha Pratis that Yosef should be transported in a wagon that has perfume. If there's such incredible Hashkocha Pratis, so the Hashkocha Pratis should be that Yosef should not be sold as a slave, period. That he should be released from his captivity. They should say, you know, it's not nice, human trafficking, we shouldn't be doing this. You know what? And that day the UN should go and make an inspection and they should say, it's okay, let him go. So what's the pshat? So the pshat is that no, there are times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no choice but to bring upon us galus, to bring upon us suffering. But in the suffering, there are miracles. It's a very disturbing thing.
You can't change what has to happen. You can just
the way it happens. Like you talk about like I once read a novel, maybe I saw a movie, I don't know, about a person who went back in time. I'm always fascinated with time machines. You go back in time to save Abraham Lincoln from being assassinated. To save him. So it's like, this is fiction. But there's a lot of truth in this fiction. Mm-hmm. He went back, he had an opportunity to go back in time, or he found himself, he went back in time, and there he is, Abe Lincoln, and he sees the whole thing plays out. Yeah, they have a lot of these type of things. All these different historical, and they go through all the details, even once Kennedy, something like this, same thing, and they go back, and they do everything in their power to save Abe Lincoln from being assassinated. This again is fiction. And in the most bizarre way, no matter what they did, at the end was he was assassinated. But in the meantime, He made such a big tumult. And then he comes back to the present and he opens up the encyclopedia and he sees a whole different story. He sees himself in this story. He sees a whole different story. He made it into history. But yet everything is the same. Nothing changed. The world is the same. Little things here and there. And the so this was, again, this is a goyish fiction, but there's a lot of truth in this, is that you can't change the big things. That was the lesson, the goyish lesson. You go back in history, you can't change the major events, but the details, that you can change. The little details. That concept, I don't think is such a goyish concept.
Because it affects generations.
Well, look at Yosef. Look at the details. Because Yosef was a tzaddik, he merited that the transport was perfume, not toxic odor. Because Sarah was a tzaddikus, power didn't touch her. The malachim were working overtime. But why was she captured to begin with? Why was the major thing that she was taken as a hostage? That's a traumatic experience. Why was Yosef sold as a slave to Mitzrayim? That you can't change. That, ki odoya teida ki geyer zaracha b'eretz lo elohem va'avodun v'inu yoysam. But we're in Golas. We don't have a choice. We are born into Golas. But the type of Golas, the details of Golas, what kind of Golas we're going to have, how exactly we're going to suffer in this Golas, that's up to us. That's up to us. There are those details have never been etched in stone. It's been etched in stone. Yodoya teida ki ger yihye zaracha. You can't get out of that. That's a gezer min Hashem. That's not our business. But the details, it's not predetermined. The details of how the goals will play out. That's up to you. You have a lot of power and choice to work out those details. Oh, here as well, in this pasuk, the goyim, they say to us, "Aye Elokecha, im Elokim hu yakum v'yaz recha." That's the big picture. There's going to be a galus. There's going to be a galus. They're going to say, "Where's your God?" But the details of this taunt, that, you know, that is something which, will we have the courage? That's up to, I mean, whatever it means, I don't know more. Okay, pasuk hey, el hadam amum lamata iskra, these matters, amum lamata, now here's a very important mitzudas. The mitzudas says, ele is going forward. We're referring now what we are going to mention in the future of this mizmor, which is what he's about to say now. He's going to recall Aliyah l'regel, okay. Ezgra b'avur hatzar nafshi sh'olai mishtapeches v'reitzeis lotzeis. No more time. B'avur hatzar, kamo nafshi sh'olai mishtapeches v'reitzeis lotzeis. My neshama wants to leave. Now it's very interesting. Question: is the neshama a liquid or a solid? Did you ever hear this question? Anyone ask you this question?
Gas.
Is it a gas or what is a gas? Is the gas a liquid or a solid? What is a gas in scientific terms? Do you have any scientists here? Dr. Friedman. Is a gas a liquid or a solid? More the qualities of...
Gas is a physical entity that's neither a liquid or a solid. When you take a liquid and you boil it, you make it into a gas. When you boil water, you get steam.
And what happens if you take a solid? If you take a solid and you heat it,
comes a liquid.
Some will melt.
Some will melt, and some will just burn and turn into smoke.
Oxide.
So that's also turns into a gas, a solid. Okay, I don't know. Destroying out is this is a very fascinating thing, because over here it says that my neshama.
Has the neshama ever been seen on an MRI?
Obviously not. Not that I know of, I don't know. All these ghost chasers will tell you they can see everything. But in any event, it says, the Eshbacha, this is an amazing pasuk. It's in this pasuk, the pasuk describes the neshama as a liquid. As a liquid. My neshama because of the tzad that I'm experiencing, I want out of this world. I want like suicide. Like almost as I was saying over here, because of the tzad, my neshama is like a liquid that is trying to swoosh and pour out of my guf to get out of this world. That's what it says in the mitzvahs. It says, Eile, uvavur hatzar, kama, because of the pain, nafshi she'olai, my neshama, that is upon me, mishtapeches. Mishtapeches means to pour, like a liquid. Viroitzeis lotzeis. It is desperate to get out. It's trying to pour itself out of the holes. Whatever, the body, the physical body is trapping this liquid inside. And if open up a hole, the liquid will be able to pour out. Doesn't that say that about Cain and Hevel? When Cain killed Hevel, he didn't know how to kill him. He did not know how the neshama leaves the guf. So he stabbed him multiple times in all parts of his body because he did not know where does the neshama leave. He didn't know. If you stab over here, does the person die? How does it work? The first murder in this world, he didn't know. How does a person die? The first person to die was Hevel. But how does the neshama, he made holes in his body. In order, that's what it says in Chazal. Many, because he did not know which hole, the nature of how the neshama leaves the body. He thought there has to be a hole. And if there's a hole, it's going to ooze out. It's going to slip out. What does that mean exactly? I have no idea. But over here, you have a very strange expression. And the way the Mitzudas David, the Eshbecha Olai Nafshi, my neshama has a desire to pour itself out of a hole to leave my body because of the pain. What is the pain? Thirsty, mayim, water, liquid. Everything is liquid. Liquid. We're dealing with liquid. This is a liquid asset here. Everything here is about liquid. You're right. It's very interesting. Everything here is about liquid. So let's finish up. We want to finish up. Ki evar bezochri ashavati l'sham. Now evar means I pass. I remember. This is the longing. This is a very, very, very critical yisoid. We don't really appreciate. We don't the concept of aliyah l'regel. Shaloi shpom bashone yireh called zuchur chasvei Hashem lochecha b'mokom asher yivchor. It says the mitzvah of aliyah l'Torah three times. Three times it mentions the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. And when Klal Yisrael and Golus, and when we think about Golus, what do we think about? Oh, Golus. If only there will be Mashiach will come. Oh, Mashiach, Mashiach, Mashiach. And then what? And then what? What's going to happen when Mashiach comes? No one knows. No one really knows. Mashiach's going to come and he's going to solve all of our problems. Really? Is that the way it works? Mashiach comes all of a sudden, all our problems are solved. No one knows anything what this means. So what do we think about Mashiach coming? We think, oh, there'll be a Beis HaMikdash. And therefore what? And what? How's that going to change anything? There'll be the Shechinah, there will be a divine presence resting in the Beis HaMikdash. What does that mean exactly? The divine presence is resting in this room. 10 people are learning together Torah. It says in Chazal, the Shekhinah is resting here. So we don't believe that? You don't believe that? That's the Maimon Chazal. The Shekhinah is resting in this room. There are 10 people learning Torah. The Shekhinah is resting. So in the base time, the Shekhinah will be resting. So what does that mean? It'll be more intense? There'll be a greater intensity? Is that what it means? We don't really know what all these things mean. But this it says in the Pasuk, according to at least the Mitzvahs and many of the Mepharshim, the goal, the longing of Golus to be over is in order to be able to be mekayim the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. I don't think the average person looks at it like that. The average person, they look at Mashiach coming, it's more of a personal problem solver. Problem solver. I have issues, parnasa, refuah, shaduchim, problem solver. There's war in the world, inflation, machlokes, problem. Oh yeah, it's a nice thing. A person does an avera. Maybe it's even a big burden. If I did an avera, I have to go to Beis HaMikdash or carbon. Who has time to do this? To run to Eretz Yisrael to bring a carbon? What is a carbon? An animal? I don't understand how this works. What does it mean to sacrifice an animal? I'm not really, you know, to me, I can't go to a bris. I stand in the back of the shul. I can't even hear the baby cry. It makes me, I'm going to go watch them slaughter an animal. I'm not really into this. What is this all about? Oh, here it says, you're right. the focus, Eila Eskara, the focus of I want Mashiach to come, so that Shalosh Pam Bashana Yere'eh Kol Zuchurcha Es Pnei Hashem Elokecha. That's what you should, that's what we should be thinking about. That is the goal of Mashiach. Three times a year we should merit to come to the Beis HaMikdash. It's a whole different perspective of what are we yearning for. If this is the Eila Eskira of our Tsar, it's a whole different perspective. Let's finish up.
Because it represents so much more. Yes, you yearn to go to the Beis HaMikdash to have the Kabbalists and have the Beis HaMikdash.
But he says, I didn't explain it. I didn't really explain it correctly because he doesn't even say that. He says the experience of traveling. When you travel, what are you thinking about? Do you enjoy the traveling? Do you enjoy going on the plane, getting in a car service, go to the airport, and then waiting online through TSA?
Great excitement.
It is a very great excitement. It is. When it used to be. I mean, it definitely is. When you do it very often, if you have to go do this every single week, people who travel back and forth, you know, every 2-3 weeks for business, they don't enjoy it. It's torture for them. It's torture.
Like traveling 3 times a day.
But when you think about, I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, going for the simcha. So what's you think? Oh, I'm going to be there for Yom Tov. I'm going for a wedding. Going for a simcha. I'm going to be by the Kaisel. Do you get excited? Okay, we have to go renew your passport. You have to go buy a ticket. You have to go pack and buy luggage and go through security and wait in the lounge, the lobby, and board the airplane and buckle yourself in. Well, the very first time you do it, especially children, they love it. This is wow. In fact, for some people, it's more exciting than what you do when you arrive. When you reach your destination, and now what? And now what? It's boring. I'm nothing to do anymore. You go to the Kaisel, and now what? It's boring. Let's go back home already. You have nothing to do. For some people, the traveling is really exciting. Isn't it amazing? That's what it says over here. It doesn't even talk about over here in this pasuk the experience, your destination. It says, Eila Eskara. Oh, I remember the good old days. I remember going to the airport. I remember going to security. I remember getting on the plane, buying the ticket. Boarding now, last call to get on the plane. That's what it says here. This Eila Eskara, and I have so much pain that I can't do this, my neshama is trying to escape. The Eshcha Lainavshi, what do I remember? Ki ever, when I traveled, Basach, first class, okay, I traveled business class, I remember when I arrived in Eretz Yisrael, I used to walk down that long corridor, just walk and walk and walk and walk. I remember tottering with all these people going together, walking to the airport, until I got Beis Elokim. Bekol Rina V'Soida Hamoin Chagig, and we were singing and dancing all along the trip. We were singing Hava Negila. We came when the plane landed, everyone was clapping and they were singing Avieinu L'Shalom. That's what I remember. It doesn't over here talk about the joy of davening, the joy of bringing the korbanos, the joy of seeing the Shechina. It doesn't say that. Isn't it a shock what it says? The tsar I have of the journey was so exciting. This needs explanation. Because that's not the ikkar. The ikkar is what you do when you arrive. And here it talks about Eila Eskara. These Eila Eskara are words which are, you know, sacred words.
Because a lot of times in the travel, the anticipation of where you go is greater than when you finally get there. Yeah, oh, we're going to the museum.
That's a problem. That is a big problem. That's exactly the problem. If you're going on a trip and you enjoy the journey more than what you do when you reach your destination, you got a problem.
Because the anticipation is the greatest joy.
Getting there is
actually getting there, then you have disappointment.
You didn't phrase like that.
You just have disappointment. When you get there, you're disappointed.
Because you haven't met your expectations that you had while you were traveling. That's what disappointment is if you have a high expectation, then your disappointment is greater.
It's a very...
Because then there's the reality.
Tell me, okay, let's have some people, they...
That's exactly what happened to Abraham.
Lech lecha. Lech lecha. El Arez Hashem. And when he arrived, there was a disappointment. When he arrived, there was a famine. There was a famine. He had to go down to Egypt. And he had a lot of problems. And then load problems. And Sodom problems. Problems. It wasn't... But lech lecha. Lech lecha. That's what Hashem said to him. But that's not the ideal. I mean... Look, when people think about... Like, when people, they go and they talk about... Like, you know, you learn Daf Yomi. Oh, remember the Sima Shas in MetLife. How... So there were certain moments that were very meaningful. Well, a person gets married. Okay, oh, they got married, they went to their own wedding, and they went to the wedding of their children. Do you remember today the journey, how you got to the wedding hall? Do you remember?
Your journey of expectation for the weeks before the wedding is high.
Chos and Kala.
Then you have the reality of what happened equals your disappointment. Expectation minus reality equals disappointment.
So that's a problem. We're not looking for disappointments here. Over here we're talking about the history of the Jewish people.
That's why that whole program tries to teach you not to build up your expectations so high, so expectations minus the reality will be lesser of a disappointment.
This needs a hesber. This pasuk, Eila Esker, and it talks about the journey. I remember Kim Evor, the journey, Basach, on a beautiful vehicle that was covered. It wasn't a flatbed truck. And people just holding on for dear life. They were sitting in a luxurious vehicle that covered them from all sides. And then when they arrived, they tottered. They moved as a group together until ad beis elokim. And they were singing b'kolin v'soda hamayin chayeg. The multitudes were rejoicing. And then what? That I'm not. I don't care about that. That I don't care about. That I don't care about. That I don't have good memories. I don't have good memories of what happened. All I remember was the journey. It's so funny. When I went to the CMA Shas, I don't remember. I didn't understand. I couldn't even hear one word that was said because I sat in a place where there was such a horrible echo. Such a horrible echo. When it was over, I listened to all the speeches on video, the whole thing I listened to in class. But I do remember the journey. Because the journey, there was gridlock traffic, because someone, I got a car, I had this whole Misa with a guy who wanted to take me, the whole story, and I gave in to him, and he messed me up, and then there was gridlock traffic, and they warned us over and over, they said, don't walk, they said these messages, and then we violated their rule, we was a driver, and we told the driver, you drive, and we got out of the car, and we started to walk, and Waze told us, it's a 25-minute walk from where we were to get to the hall, and the traffic would be there for 2 hours. So we got out of the car and we did what the Aguda told us not, and we started walking. We followed, and we were the only ones. And then we're walking, and I turn around, and all of a sudden I see hundreds of people followed us, the blind leading the blind. And it was a good idea because we got there on time. Otherwise, the driver was still sitting there for another 2 hours. So I remember it was a very interesting journey. I totally remember the journey. It was what to recall.
And it didn't bother you because you had your expectation of getting in there and how great it's going to be.
It wasn't so great, but...
No, so the reality sat when you got there. Odd, basically. When you got to there, then you realize that it's...
All right, we're going to have to continue tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem. This is the Hagdama to Lamnatzeach, Livnei Kaira, to the Meikairach. There's a lot here to discuss. Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. All right, we'll take a short break.
Welcome.
Blazer, welcome. How does it feel to be here?